The IAB Australia podcast, digital advertising leaders and the issues that matter.
How do we make it simple?
Try to stop a lot of the buzzwords.
A chance to change the way a whole industry works.
For more information, visit iabaustralia.com.au.
Welcome to the IAB Australia podcast. I'm Gayla Roy, CEO of the IAB in Australia. With CTV revenue representing nearly 50% of publisher video revenue in Australia and supply starting to expand beyond broadcaster and YouTube inventory, we thought it was time to have a chat about how the market's developing, how both buyers and sellers can be confident in trading, and what industry standards will help with an effective and efficient marketplace. To help guide us through this conversation, we've got two fantastic guests, one local, one global. Firstly, we have Shani Kohendran, who is the Digital Advertising Strategy and Product Director for Paramount ANZ. And our global guest, hi Shani. we have Rob Hazan, who's the Senior Director Product for Index Exchange, dialing in from the US. Welcome both.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Likewise. Thanks, Gay.
All right, CTV, hottest topic in the industry. We'll have a great conversation. But before we jump into that, we'd like to find out about the humans in our industry, why they join, why they stay, how they fell into it. Shani, let's start with you. What's your background and backstory?
Sure. So my career has been driven by a passion for innovation and a knack for strategic thinking. I started in sales working for digital publishers that were challenger brands. I don't know if you've heard of a company called MediaSmart, which later became Telstra Media Advertising. And then back in the day, In The Mix, Faster Louder, which is now Junkie Media. I learned a lot about scrappiness, creativity and strategy in those roles. So when I was in sales, I got to experience businesses in the midst of transformation. I loved that experience and I wanted more. I landed a role at Yahoo in their strategic integration team, followed by roles in strategic partnerships before moving into marketing, commercial and business strategy in transformation roles at SBS and Seven. I love doing things differently, being challenged, learning new things, building products, working with emerging and new technologies, and most importantly, collaborating with smart and interesting people, which is why I now work at Paramount ANZ as the Digital Advertising Strategy and Product Director, where I'm responsible for our digital commercial strategy with a focus on innovation, ad products, data monetization, and ad tech.
Fantastic. Anyone who's been through those early Telstra years when they were trying to find out what their role in media, telco and media, definitely knows a thing or two about our industry. Shani, I'm going to take you further back. When you were a child, what did you want to do? Was it digital advertising strategy or what was the intent?
I wanted to do two things. I wanted to become a heart transplant surgeon so I could save my grandpa when he became sick and old. And I wanted to be a policy writer for the UN. So that's what I wanted to do specifically. I wanted to save the world or save my gramps.
Oh, fantastic. Cool. Rob, what about you?
Those are pretty high aspirations. When I was a kid, I think I wanted to be an astronaut or you know, a monster truck driver, you know, sort of typical little boy stuff. My career story, I'll start that one a little earlier. You know, when I was a senior in high school and I was talking to my parents about going to college, university, and you know, we're talking about where I want to go and what would I want to study. And my father is a doctor, he's a pediatrician, and my mother was a software engineer. And I said, well, those are my only two options. Obviously, there's nothing else in the world outside of being a doctor or a software engineer. And my dad said, don't be a doctor. You know, like it's great working with children, but it's miserable dealing with insurance companies and all the paperwork and bureaucracy. Don't do it. So I said, okay, well, the only option then is to become a software engineer. And so that's what I did, you know, following in my mother's footsteps. I went to school and I got a degree in computer science. And I came out and I was fortunate enough for my first job out of school to work at a hedge fund, Bridgewater Associates, which at the time was the largest, might still be the largest in the world. And really great opportunity. And I started working on a team of really bright people and it was cool, except for the fact that I didn't really like writing software. Turned out that was not my passion. And my boss at the time said, well, why don't you try business analysis, right? So you can be the guy who writes some requirements and work with our offshore development team to get them built, and you can test the software and see if we end up building what we wanted to. And that sort of set me down the path of product management. Fast forward a couple of years later, I had another, I think, very clever boss who realized, again, like, you know, Rob, you've done some good work here, but you're not really learning anymore. You've sort of plateaued in your career. You need to be challenged again. Maybe think about trying something different. And similarly, I think finance is not really for me. I don't want to work at a hedge fund. And so I looked around, the people in my sphere, and there was this really smart guy, Errol, who I had gone to college with, as it turns out, and also we worked together in finance. And he had gone to this small startup, it was 80 people at the time, called AppNexus. And he said, this place is really interesting. They work in online advertising, but sort of on the tech side. And you can have your feet in both worlds. You can be a technologist and you can go and solve business problems. And I think you might enjoy this place. And so that was the start of my career in ad tech over 10 years ago. And the rest is sort of history. I've had a number of roles, from implementation consulting to, well, now product management, which I've been doing for a while at this point. And I had no clue that ad tech existed as a career path when I was a child. And I still do it because it's fascinating. It moves quickly. It's always evolving. And I've loved it. It's been a great industry to work in.
I'm going to let you get a plug in here. Why Index as your employer of choice at the moment?
Yeah. So, I was working at Google, and I was a product owner there for the Google publisher tag. For anyone who's worked with GAM, the Google publisher tag. And it was good work, and I was surrounded by really interesting people, but the pace at which we were building and innovating was, how do I put this? It was a little bit slow because we had to deal with a lot of legal implications. I spent a lot of time speaking to lawyers and not as much time as I wanted to building new functionality. And so my current boss, Mike McNeely, who's now the head of product at Index, he gave me a call and he said, hey, we've got this great role that you can come and take and sort of lead omnichannel product at Index. And at the time, omnichannel for us meant, web, mobile app, CTV, you can lead monetization across all of these screens, and you'll have more flexibility to build a team and work on the things that you find interesting and meaningful. And I said, that sounds great. And here I am, over 3.5 years later. And Mike was true to his word. It's I've had a lot of autonomy. I've gotten to work on some really interesting and important stuff. I've gotten to do a lot of work on standard setting with the IAB Tech Lab, and I've enjoyed every minute of it. So I've been really happy at Index, and I hope it's a place that I'll continue to call home for a long time.
Oh, awesome. All right. Well, I'm going to stick with you, Rob, for a little bit, and I'll get you to pull right out, and I'm going to give you a impossible task almost. Mm-hmm. So I know every market has its own flavor in relation to CTV, but if you had to summarize, I guess, in a few sentences, the biggest growth drivers and the major concerns as the CTV market expands, do you want to have a crack at that?
Sure. I've thought about this one a little bit, and if we sort of pull out at a very macro level, we live in a golden age of content creation, right? We have all these, global content development studios that are pouring billions of dollars a year into developing really compelling content. And at the same time, we live in an era of hyper-personalization. You can discover and receive recommendations and subscribe to the content that you find most interesting and compelling. And you can watch it on your time, on your schedule, in the conditions that suit you, right? Whether it's during your commute or whether it's at home winding down after dinner with a glass of wine. And this both high quality and convenience, I think, has led to a ton of eyeballs, and the advertising dollars obviously follow the eyeballs. So I think those are sort of some of the biggest growth drivers at a macro level. In terms of some of the problems facing the industry, what are some of the things that are maybe stifling growth? I think a lot of it has been sort of fragmentation, right? And so streaming and connected TV has sort of grown out of linear TV, which existed in a sort of very different fashion from, for example, digital programmatic on the web. And those two worlds are now colliding. I think that fragmentation of sort of the traditional way of buying, print and broadcast and radio, reconciling that with sort of the measurability and addressability and, instant targeting and feedback that you get from programmatic, that has both been something that has, to some degree, lack of standardization has slowed down the growth and evolution there, but also has so much promise and so much potential. And as we figure out how to bridge the gap and how to bring all of these advanced techniques to connected TV buying, I think it's going to be, it's going to continue to see explosive growth.
Shani, you work in a really interesting company because you've got local and global understanding, linear and digital side of things.
Yeah. But
from what Rob said, what do you think the difference are in this market?
I think we're pretty aligned from a global perspective from what Rob's talked about, the audiences having more choice to consume wherever and whenever they want, the content, supernova that we've got so much content available to us. I think the fragmentation, and then I think the shifting audiences from linear to digital and being able to capture that in a meaningful way. I think for us, when we think about fragmentation, and I'm thinking here about linear and digital, I wouldn't be here if I didn't talk about VOZ, and we talk about the opportunity that VOZ actually now brings to us from their overnights.
So Shani, for those who may not know what VOZ is, can you give me two sentences of what VOZ is?
Yeah, sure. So VOZ, or Virtual Australia, is the new ratings data set combining TV and broadcaster video on demand audiences. It's now recently launched with next day data delivery from, I think it was this week. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, May the 1st. Yeah.
Yeah, great. Awesome. Yeah. Thank you. So that allows us to be able to, effectively measure linear and digital or streaming video audiences from an overnight perspective in this specific most recent example. Some of the things that I think, Rob, you didn't touch on it, but I know we're all thinking of it. We can't deny that rate hikes in Australia and economic uncertainty have impacted media budgets. But as you talked about, Rob, on the other hand, technology is evolving at an incredible pace that, combined with regulatory scrutiny, means that we're moving so much faster to create a more efficient and fair environment. But we're also building products and data capabilities on connected TV that allow brands to go beyond that first impression, and we're building meaningful measurement of the offerings. So in this climate in particular, proof of performance is so important. And I think that's a huge opportunity for us. And that talks to that, a little bit of that fragmentation, but also being able to provide measurement solutions that allow you to understand what fully didn't or did resonate with your audience, enrich your audience understanding, and understand how your campaign is delivered on full funnel marketing outcomes. I think that's really important for us, and that's something that we're, if we can nail, we'll be able to really harness the growth from an audience perspective of connected TV and match it with marketing opportunities.
One of the, I guess, the differences in our market, Shani, has been the, not control of supply, but, different, a very clean focus marketplace. So we've had the broadcasters and YouTube primarily, and now we've got, fast channels sort of starting to appear, take off in this market and be pitched. Do you see that as a, when you're talking to your US colleagues, is that a major difference in market?
So yes, absolutely. So so when we think about Paramount globally, we've also obviously got Pluto TV, which is the largest FAST platform globally. And we've got Paramount Plus in the US, Paramount Plus with ads. We have an ad tier. When we think about all of those strategies, we have a FAST strategy in Australia. It is definitely something that we have the opportunity to learn from with Paramount from a global perspective. We know, with Netflix joining, Disney Plus joining, and Binge just launching, that our environment and our climate from a less clean, I guess you can say, gay environment. Would be
more fragmented, I would say. I don't know, it's not clean, it's just, it's busier, right? There's a lot more going on.
Yeah. 100%. But, you know, it's only going to benefit our industry. More premium inventory in this market will fuel more competition between us all, keeps us on our toes, accelerates innovation, you know, helps to create more meaningful opportunities.
Yeah. You know, I do have to give you guys credit in the sense, you know, sure, you know, a bunch of the content and some of these, you know, fast and streaming apps maybe, you know, originate in our part of the world and migrate out. But I think for a while we've been looking towards the Australian market in particular as a bit of a canary in the coal mine. You guys tend to, maybe because it's a simplified, clean marketplace, as you put it, you guys tend to sort of do stuff a little earlier than other markets do. And so maybe, you know, speaking of regional differences, you know, we take a look at the trends in your market and we say, oh, those are probably things that we're going to see in other markets that we operate in over the course of the next couple of years. So maybe that cleanliness and simplicity is a benefit for you guys. And we pay attention to it because, you know, we see these things translating.
Yeah, it's good to hear. We're an interesting size market because we're small enough to all know each other. Mm-hmm. But also there's enough revenue to make it worthwhile to sort of play around with it. So
absolutely.
Good to hear. So, Rob, I know Index Exchange has been focused on transparency for quite a number of years, you know, the leading pillar of your organization. Could you explain what transparency in CTV actually means and what does it mean both from a broadcaster and a buyer point of view?
Yeah, you know, I'll answer the question from the perspective of current state and sort of things that we've learned from historical patterns, and then I'll give you a little bit of insight maybe into where we think things are going, where we see things progressing. So, a lot of at Index, you know, Index Exchange has been around for a long time. You know, we've operated in historically in the web space since you know, probably for about 15 years at this point. You know, some of the patterns that have played out in web, we've seen again and again. And one of those is, you know, in this tension between monetization and sales channel conflict that publishers have, one of the tools that they often use is sort of opacity, right? Being sort of the opposite of transparency, which is to say, if a publisher is concerned that opening up their supply to a programmatic marketplace might erode the value of the direct sold supply, what they might do, for example, is this was the web pattern. Instead of disclosing the domain of the website that was originating an ad request, they would just say sportssite.com, right? Or they might say, you know, if you had a specific publisher, they might give you the domain, but they wouldn't give you the full URL, the full path. Right. So if it was, again, taking sort of an old school web example, if it was in the US, MSN.com, right, they might not include that it was MSN.com/sports or MSN.com/news. They would just say, well, this is MSN. Right. And this is sort of a typical pattern maybe in, you know, 2010, 2011, and this sort of obfuscation of the true nature of the supply. And over time, when we watched this market, the digital programmatic market play out, what we saw was a flight towards transparency, if you will, right? That the publishers that gave more insight into the source of the supply and what it was in the context saw better monetization and greater yield because buyers knew that they were serving their marketing message adjacent to relevant content, right? You know, the ad placement has to make sense in the context of the content that it's within. And so we sort of see transparency in streaming and connected TV in the same way. Today, a lot of the streaming and connected TV supply comes with, for example, an app bundle. But if the app bundle is, you know, choose your favorite fast app here, right? So say it's Pluto. In many cases, the publisher, who either is the content or the app owner, right, may not disclose what network is it, what channel is it, what genre is it, et cetera, right? So there are varying degrees of transparency and all sorts of contractual implications that limit or constrain these things, right? So in some scenarios, you may see this type of transparency. The seller of the supply may be able to offer it. In other scenarios, if there's some sort of a carriage agreement or a reselling agreement, they may not be able to expose some of that transparency. And so in the long run, we expect to see the streaming and connected TV market sort of replicate the same pattern that we saw in web with respect to greater transparency. As buyers over time, we think will demand it. They will want to know exactly which network, which channel, maybe even which show they're appearing in, their ad is appearing in, so that they can have the full faith of, you know, placing a confident bid. And that's kind of the direction we see transparency go.
Yeah, well, it's good to hear in amongst that the, you know, transparency does drive greater yield, because sometimes, you know, that conversation around doing the right thing, you just need that economic proof that it's worthwhile sort of putting in the work. Shani, we know at the moment you've already touched on that the market, you know, not only from a consumer point of view, but from a business point of view is pretty tough. What sort of transparency discussions are you having in market, and what sort of scrutiny are clients putting on?
Yeah, sure. So from a client's perspective, what we're seeing are clients, agency partners are increasingly cognizant of any data costs laid into CPMs. So, you know, there's desire for full transparency regarding how costs are applied and the quality of the data being applied. Agencies, you know, are being trained to actively assess and ask about the quality of data. When we're thinking about what clients are asking for of us, there's an increasing expectation for post-campaign exposure reports to demonstrate delivery. We're being asked for content signals generally for measurement and reporting purposes. But for us, it's about finding the right balance and aligning with the right objectives. You could say that's paramount. We are testing and learning, but we're being very careful with who we partner with. Ultimately, the responsibility for privacy and how the data is utilized is on us, right? It's on publishers. So sometimes we see conflict between the request for content signals versus the outcomes the data aims to provide. Sometimes we see multiple outcomes and KPIs that may be counterproductive or in conflict, leading us to question whether the approach could dilute the results and take away from the value of providing these content signals. I think there's a bit more work we need to work towards as an industry on selecting and agreeing to the right buying objectives before we go all in. I think this is something that we need to be really intentional about. Something else that we have a conversation and we're thinking about as well is consistency across the industry of what data can be shared and how it's personalized. Rob, you feel like you know this from your time at the big Google. Sometimes we get asked to share things that you probably wouldn't ask Google to. There's pressure for us to be transparent when sometimes it's not being asked of the big tech players of the world. And the same can be said in return. What is the expectation our partners would have in terms of what they share with us? So there's a lot there to be considered, I think.
Yeah, that definitely that. I mean, you know, we've done a lot of work with government and ACCC to try and sort of work out what that level of transparency is that doesn't breach any sort of, you know, either business information or consumer information, and having it done in a really robust way. So I guess, Rob, on that, you know, you do a lot of work with Tech Lab, you mentioned, in terms of the standards that are here and they're coming, let's go a bit deeper. So what's sort of in market that people are or aren't adopting that could do more to make CTV transparent? Where are we at?
Yeah, so you know, obviously we have OpenRTB 2.6, which is the new revision, a new version of OpenRTB that's intended to fully embrace the market realities of streaming and connected TV, and so namely it does that by introducing language and mechanics around ad podding, right? So how do you replicate a linear style ad break in digital programmatic ad insertion into the stream? And so that's something that we see a lot of interest, a lot of activity. Many of our partners on the buy side and sell side are very interested in OpenRTB 2.6. It has a number of features that I think folks can adopt in the short term. For example, signaling whether the ads are being inserted via SSAI or they're being inserted on the client side. You know, basic things like this, things that don't have much of a barrier to adoption. And it also tries to be, 2.6 tries to be a forward-looking protocol too, and it tries to enable some scenarios that folks aren't ready to actually enact yet. So for example, it has the capability to allow a seller to request multiple ad breaks Let's say for a piece of video on demand content, that's, you know, maybe someone's watching, an end user's watching a movie that's 2 hours long. If you want to solicit ads for all of the ad breaks for that entire 2 hour long movie, you could do that all upfront in one bid request. I don't think anybody in the industry is ready to do something like that at the moment. And we can talk about actually the pros and cons of even doing that to begin with. But the point is that it's intended to be a flexible enough spec that as the industry grows, it can manage to address some new use cases. And of course, the nature of OpenRTB, especially now that we've moved it from a PDF document into a GitHub repository, is it makes it easier for this thing to evolve, as the needs of our industry evolve. So OpenRTB 2.6 is one answer. I'll give you the answer around what's a piece that I find super compelling that hasn't received much adoption, but I hope it will in the future. And this is another angle of transparency, which is the efforts of the Security Foundation's working group. So this is a group that, if I'm to try to simply summarize it, is trying to bring sort of cutting edge digital cryptography techniques into ad tech. And like, why would you do that? The really simple analogy here is if you were doing online banking, you would not do business with a bank that didn't have an encryption scheme as you were doing your transactions, right? As you were logging into their site, as you were transferring money. If all of that was happening in clear text without any kind of encryption or protection on it, you'd say like, this is too dangerous. I can't work with this bank. In ad tech, we haven't used those types of techniques. We haven't really had to in the past to secure our transactions, but the transactions now, especially in TV, are so valuable. They're starting to become much more valuable than the web transactions were, that we need to start protecting ourselves against fraudsters and those who would look to, illegitimately take, siphon money out of our ecosystem, right? And so the work of that working group, the Security Foundation's working group, is to start bringing some of these, modern, mathematical or cryptographic techniques into ad tech so that we can do things like authenticate and legitimize the end user. Authenticate and legitimize the device that the user is on so that someone can't take inexpensive Android supply and sell it as really high quality connected TV supply, right? Which these are things that have happened before. These are fraud schemes that folks have perpetrated. And so we're building a number of standards to make those types of schemes impractical. And I think the big benefit of doing this is it's going to create even more confidence in programmatic transactions, especially in the open market, where today you see a lot of buyers want to transact, especially on TV, via deals, because deals are a bit of a proxy for security. It's one-to-one. You know who you're buying it from, and you feel sort of comforted knowing that, okay, I'm getting this from a trusted party because it's coming through this one-to-one deal. Imagine if we could provide some of those types of guarantees around you can trust the party that this is coming from for an open market, a rich open market. I think that opens up the gates for lots of interesting new use cases, and that's the piece that I'm most looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see where that goes. There's obviously been discussions for a few years around sort of the encryption piece and a lot of sort of talk around working with DLT partners, and there seemed to be a cost and a pain connected with it, so I'm sure that will sort of ease out. From a sustainability point of view, does that add a lot of computational sort of power in the mix, Rob? I don't know if you can answer that.
Yeah, it's a great question. Yeah. I think at this point, a lot of the work that we've done to think about how to secure these transactions in this way, it has been a little bit academic, right? And so it's been a little bit conceptual. Off the bat, what I can tell you is most likely the way that you would parties in the ad tech supply chain would implement these techniques, you probably wouldn't go and validate or authenticate every single request that comes across your server. What you probably do is you apply some statistical sampling, right? So you say, okay, I'll take some small fraction of the bid requests that I see, some small fraction of the billing notifications, the impression notifications that I see, and I'll validate those, and I'll make some statistical inferences based on that. And so I think that's a way that you can still take advantage of these, modern, computing techniques and the guarantees that they give you, and not break the bank or overheat your servers doing it.
Yeah, fantastic. I love the talk around transparency. I really love because it protects or it sort of has in mind both the marketers, that end-to-end transparency, but also making sure that broadcasters, publishers, you know, get the money that they deserve.
Absolutely.
Shani, in terms of standards for you guys, how are you? Are you working from a global point of view, or is 10?
So from our point of view, we obviously have access to what Global are doing. They will support us, but we're lucky enough to be agile enough to choose our own path forward. I think for us, when we're thinking about Open RTB 2.6, it's definitely something that we support as a business, and we agree to the protocols. I think when we're thinking about other parts about transparency, OMSDK is something that's also important for us. Mm-hmm. You know, we support it. We're currently in prioritization mode with other projects and initiatives, you know, thinking about moving it onto CTV as well with Android, Apple TV and Amazon Fire. I think for us, as I go back to that point of, you know, broadcasters, we have to consider additional factors. You know, it's about privacy and how that data is utilized. So that responsibility is back on us. And then I think around, you know, a better agreement on standards and methodologies. And I definitely think that these initiatives are all a positive towards our industry and for us. And as you said, Gay, you know, helps us to better define the quality of our inventory as well.
Open measurements is a great example. I think it's really encouraging to see folks lean into that, so that you don't just have to trust that your creative has played out, right? You can actually measure and validate it, and third party independent validators, you know, some of the ad measurement, you know, vendors, the ad verification folks can also provide that service to measure that stuff, and I think that's really great. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And I'm looking forward to, obviously, there's an increasing amount of buy-side standards as well, which, you know, we need to get all our agency partners and advertisers keen to adopt so we can make that whole, you know, whole piece work together. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been super fun talking to you, and I'm sure there'll be a lot more to discuss around CTV as the market grows and evolves. Thanks, Shani. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you so much, Gay.
Thanks, Gay. Thank you.
The IAB Australia podcast, digital advertising leaders and the issues that matter. For more information, visit iabaustralia.com.au.